It's showtime, folks!
Ooh, so this is the thanks I get for working overtime.
Overtime!
Well, this is a little different than I thought it would be last time I was in here. We have a different feeling starting the show off this time.
Isn't it?
Didn't really expect it to be this way. But, I mean, it's almost intriguing and it's almost welcome in a way. Kind of, I guess. I don't know. But welcome into Overtime. Welcome into the truly hard seltzer studios of Fox Sports Knoxville. Fan Run Radio, we are coming to you live from an overcast day here in Knoxville, Tennessee, a little after 6 o'clock here, FM 105.7 AM 1340, streaming on your Fan Run Radio app, fanrunradio.com, the brand new fanrunradio.com, by the way. Go check the new site out. It looks absolutely fantastic. And, of course, we are live in living color on Periscope. I'm Tanner Carson. I've got Malcolm Harris to my left. We got Justin Feist up in the producer's perch. And fresh from his trip back to the gates of hell, T-Town, Tuscaloosa, Alabama, USA, we have the one and only Matt King. Well, there's a lot more Matt Kings, but still, he's the only one that we care about. No offense if there's anyone else named Matt King listening to the show.
No one ever told me they cared about me before.
Well, we do, Matt King.
But Matt, real quick. How was Tuscaloosa? How is that place down there? Can you describe it to us real quick before we get into the multiple matters at hand here on this Monday?
Of course. So, have you guys ever just gone on a long road trip and, you know, you're driving down the interstate and your mind just kind of floats away and then you kind of, you know, pull yourself together and you're like, where in the world am I? That is, yeah. Tuscaloosa, Alabama. You don't know where you are. It's so weird down there. Like, without the University of Alabama, I mean, the state as a whole is probably non-existent, but definitely not the area. It's so flat and then, like, weirdly wooded in some areas. They have weird road names. They got Old Watermelon Road. New Watermelon Road, Watermelon Road. They really like watermelon down there, I guess.
I thought the first road he said was Old Town Road.
That would be crazy.
I thought I heard that for a second, but they had three different types of
watermelon there.
Okay.
Interesting.
It doesn't really seem like the life. There's not really anything to do in there. I mean, they have a couple of social country club kind of areas, and then, boom, the university, and that's pretty much it. There's a very distinct kind of individual people that attend the University of Alabama. I think I'll just leave it at that.
Like, can you describe it to us?
Because
what I imagine there, I imagine your typical frat bros everywhere, and didn't I imagine just everyone else is from New Jersey?
Yeah, that's almost Jersey.
I imagine Southern frat bros and a bunch of transplants from New Jersey.
I think everyone there, as a student at Alabama, was white. I don't think I saw any diversity, and then everyone, oh, let's go to the Lynn Kai house. Oh, yeah.
His name is probably Kyle.
Oh, easily. And
Najee Harris,
Kyle's,
is my best
Chad's,
friend.
Brett's, Brent's.
Yeah, all of them. And I guess the last thing I'll say is they don't deserve the team that they have. I'll leave it at that.
That's breaking news right there. But thank you, Matt. Yeah, Alabama doesn't deserve a lot of things. But thank you for that observation. But I'm glad you survived, though. Because that's not a trip many people make and come back the same way. I'm sure now, And especially when you go down there for a third Saturday in October game, I'm sure now, you know, being the way that they are as a program and the way that we are as a program, it's a lot less hostile than, say, you go down there that 2003 game that went to five overtimes, you know, kind of fresh off it being revealed that Philip Fulmer is the one who kind of ratted them out to the NCAA.
Yeah.
I'd say it's a lot less hostile now. But I don't know. That's just... It just seems like a place that doesn't deserve anything, basically. Enough stalling, though. I don't know where to start. I mean, I know different areas where to start, but I mean, guys, first and foremost, hey, you know what they say? Good teams win, but what do great teams do?
They cover
the spread.
They sure cover. What did the Vols do? They covered that 35-point spread. They held Alabama to 35. How about that, guys? It's a moral victory Monday. You held Alabama to their lowest scoring output of the season.
And one of those touchdowns was a fumble return touchdown.
So you actually held them to 28 when it comes to offense right there. There's obvious reasons for why that was the case, which we will get to here in a second. But first and foremost, I know it's 2-5. I know it's still not looking great when it comes to bowl game chances. They didn't really play like a 2-5 team for the most part, at least when it comes to their mentality. They actually looked like they were getting up for that game. And especially after some things in game started to go your way, you saw an attitude shift when it came to the Tennessee team, not only on the field, but the sideline as well. Sideline was going crazy, especially when you'd have some big type of momentum plays. The first thing I think of, Trey Smith getting up, helping just run up that pile, push Tim Jordan across the sticks.
What a play. That was amazing to see.
When's the last time we did that against a team of that caliber? I can't remember.
2007, maybe. Maybe.
I mean, that's just like finishing the play, which, you know, obviously wasn't the case at the beginning of the season. And I mean, the team effort and, you know, the guys that we saw playing against Alabama Saturday, that team beats Georgia State 50-0. You know, so I mean, we've come a long way in a few games, and you know, we're going to get into it, but we're calling this a moral victory, but it actually did, just despite, you know, how, you know, we got screwed over by refs somewhat, and, you know, obviously not a great call at the goal line by old Garantano, but, you know, it felt like we're going in the right direction.
Let's go ahead and just start right there, too, since you mentioned it as well, Justin. These certain penalty calls and some non-penalty calls. And we know Alabama didn't really need any help from the stripes. Oh, but were they assisted on many drives? I never want to be the person who the first thing he does is bitches about officiating. Mm-hmm. I'd never want to be that person. And I didn't think it'd be in the realm of possibility me end up complaining about any type of officiating calls walking into the Alabama game. You walk into that thinking you're probably going to get blown out anyway, so what's the use really complaining about calls in a game that even if there were no penalties called on you, you would still lose by multiple touchdowns. However, there were some egregious calls. I'm going to let one of you take it here real quick. What's your most egregious call? If we were still doing Mount Rushmore in the summer, I feel like we can make a Mount Rushmore of the bad calls and the non-calls too. I personally... I'm torn between the Daryl Taylor unsportsmanlike conduct penalty. I just want to roll my eyes 360 degrees all the way around and back. I'm torn between that and as soon as JG motions out to the right and Tim Jordan is your Wildcat quarterback, there's the whistle because they had to fix something, which we don't even have an explanation, right? I guess it was a play clock issue is what the excuse they're running with, even though there was nothing actually wrong with the play clock. I'm torn. Where y'all think about these calls? Let's get these calls out of the way before we get to what we're really mad about the most.
Both of those is literally 1 and 2. They're both literally 1 and 2. But to me, you can call that on Daryl Taylor because I'm completely, you know, being objective here. He did lay a little bit long on Mac Jones, right?
The thing is about calling a penalty there, there has to be some malice, right? Because when I see that, I'm with you too, I look at that to see, did he put himself in a position to have a referee in a hostile environment throw that flag on him?
Yeah.
And I'm looking at that replay, both him and Mac Jones, they're just both turning their heads and to they're see looking what to see what to happened play.
At the play.
He's not having his head turned away from the ball, making sure that, hey, you're in the ground, put your face mask in the turf, yada, yada. I'm not thinking there's any malice there for it to be unsportsmanlike conduct.
But the second play you just described, you know, when JG did motion out, you could tell linebackers and cornerbacks for Alabama were freaking out. They were out of place. And then for the what was that?
Hey, hold up. Oh, something's wrong. Come over here, guys. Let's have a little official powwow. What's wrong? Play clock. Yeah. That's it.
And then they reset like it was nothing.
There we go. Official gives his little signal, and then
I would have got thrown out right there if I was Jeremy Pruitt. I would have gotten thrown out.
How did he survive 60 minutes?
I don't know, man. I have no clue.
Without committing murder of somebody or something, no clue. I'm surprised he didn't break another dry erase board.
Yeah.
It's egregious. It's terrible. Again, I never wanted to be that guy, but they're bad calls.
Yeah, we're not the only people talking about this, though. Like, everybody watching that game was aware of the calls. The ESPN commentators were aware of multiple bad calls that went against us.
Was it Tom McShay who said, I think it might have been whistle they were talking about. Tom McShay, who, by the way, why does ESPN have two sideline reporters? Why did they need Todd McShay and Molly McGrath? Why can't they just stick with one?
I think Todd was there more so for the pro potential on so. Alabama sideline.
I'm a Mel Kiper guy anyway now. it was McShay who said they're in Tuscaloosa. That's why that whistle was blown. Like that. So at least they were self-aware.
Yeah.
But you're also right, Justin. We're not the only ones talking about it. It wasn't just ESPN crew at the game. I'm seeing there's the funny video. It was at Big Orange Vols put on Twitter of all the calls set to Crazy Train by Ozzy, and you watch them and some you have like neutral fans replying that yeah, it was bad, and it's not even people saying that refs are paid off by Bama, the fix was in from Greg Sankey and the SEC officiating office. It's like, no. They were just saying, yeah, this is just objectively, some of these are bad calls. Calls I will agree with, even though I think that the rule has gotten to such a point where I don't know what a defender can do, especially in his situation where he got called for it. It was targeting on Daniel Patulli. I will say that was targeting. I do agree with that being targeting. Again, but I don't know what he can do in that situation.
The thing that made me upset about that, and I could even tell live, is because they said they were going to review the spot because Alabama fans thought that Judy had scored a touchdown there, and it was pretty obvious that was not the case.
They did find targeting.
And so then the officials were like, yeah, we're reviewing to see what the spot was like. They could have just said, yeah, we're reviewing to see if there was targeting, but they didn't do that. And then they came out going, yeah, so targeting was confirmed. Ready to go. We're just like, what?
By the way, while we were just reviewing the yardage, we found some targeting. And, Batula, you're out. That is kind of a shady way to go about it.
Guys, that's the most complete receiver in all of college football. How do you tackle him at the one? What do you do?
That's how you defend the goal line. And Pruitt said it himself. There's like you can't do anything. He was six. I don't know if it's Pruitt.
It was like 6 inches off the ground. But yeah,
you can't do anything there. That's how you defend a goal line. And he was 6 inches off the ground. Like there is no other point of contact where those two bodies could have come together. So Daniel did all he could do.
Let me clear that up. I'm not saying that. Yeah, he absolutely deserved to get called for targeting and tossed out of the game. I'm just saying when you go by the rule book, that is what it is. The rule does suck.
Yeah, as it's written, that was targeting.
The interpretations of the rule suck. But we know what happened later in the game, though. What's some other missed penalties? Juwan was it Surtain draped over him?
Patrick Surtain. I mean, he couldn't hold him.
He got roasted all
night. He couldn't hold him, and it was literally a mismatch, and it was being exploited.
So there was a non-call for the PI.
I don't know who number 5 was, man. But you remember in the back of the end zone when he had Juwan's hand.
He got
hooked.
His hand.
It was literally hooked.
And one more really good one here. I guess we'll just leave this officiating talk in the first segment because we, again, wish we had one more hour. We will be with you until 8 o'clock tonight. Wish we had one more hour to dive into
especially
this
today. Especially today.
The last officiating thing I'm going to get off my mind here. It was a penalty called on us again, and a lot of bad things happened in the red zone. A lot of bad things happen when you're approaching the goal line. And not all of them were officiating related. Again, we'll get to that here soon. But the Jawan taking that Wildcat snap, and first of all, probably scored a touchdown. I don't think he stepped out.
He scored.
The ref made him short, but there was a holding call. Now, on the review, did it look like there was some holding on Tim Jordan? Yeah, I could see that. But the thing is, the refs just threw a flag, and they looked around. Wanya Morris, 64, that's the closest.
Must have been. We're going to find holding somewhere, damn it.
And they called on Wanya Morris, but Wanya Morris doesn't even do anything close to holding when it was actually like Tim Jordan who might have had a call on him. They don't know what they're doing out there. It made them seem so incompetent, that crew. And they are SEC officials. You're just a few steps down from officiating on Sundays. You're not supposed to be that incompetent at that level.
Saban had a game plan, Pruitt had a game plan, and the officials had their game plan.
Oh,
so
they sure did.
They had to stick to it.
Think the fix was in? Do you fellas think the fix was in?
I'm never
going
to...
Let's get conspiratorial here.
I'm never going to be like a fix was in guy, but if you look at the histories that these refs had and where some of them went to high school, you know, there are biases that do exist, and this isn't a problem that's only in our games. There have been... games where there's been officials that have histories with certain schools that shouldn't
Anthony Jordan.
Yeah, that shouldn't be officiating games, in where there could be potential conflict. And I feel like the SEC does a really bad job of finding these potential biases in some refs, in some prime time, games that they choose to crew these refs in.
The line judge did go to he was raised in Birmingham. Pretty sure he grew up an Alabama fan. I'm just saying. I'm not putting my tinfoil hat on. I'm just throwing it out there.
It wasn't just the Tennessee game, too. It was also in the Florida-South Carolina game.
Awful.
The worst officiating I've ever seen.
It really makes you think the SEC wants to push as many teams as they can into the playoff and do whatever it takes.
How did Will Muschamp, of all people, not kill someone?
Oh, he wanted to. Did you see his comments after the game?
Has his little,
don't walk 40 yards away from me and drop a flag. You can drop that flag on
my feet.
Drop it
on my feet. He's got his little grandpa reading spectacles, hanging down. From his face, he's just getting ready to turn all different shades of purple and red.
About killed the messenger and the reporter that he was answering. That guy probably melted into his seat.
I would have, too.
I mean, South Carolina really did get cheated out about at least, if not two TDs, three TDs.
Well, it's not a banner day for SEC officiating.
Not at all.
I'll leave with this before we hit this first break here. I'm not the first person to say this. I'm definitely not the first person to say this in regards to our game. Officials at all levels, college and up, college and professional, especially professional, since it's more of a full-time thing in professional sports, officials need to have press conferences as well. They need to be held accountable. Why shouldn't they be held accountable? Serious question. Everyone else who has some type of impact on the game, they have to talk to media. They have to try to hold themselves accountable, whether it's players or coaches. And even some cases when the situation calls for it, team owners, GMs, things of that nature. Why are officials so coddled and safe from having to answer? That's just what I'm wondering.
Crickets.
They're not supposed to be this much of a deal, but in the 21st century we got replay and we can see everything they do wrong. So it does seem like there's kind of a gap to fill. Somebody needs, accountability, especially after bad, bad called games.
Well, that was the officiating side of things. We're going to hit this first break of the program and open up the phone lines as well if you would like to weigh in on anything regarding the third Saturday in October, the 2019 edition. Our number for the Nextdoor Home Group hotline is 865-546-8200, 546-8200. We are hitting the first break of the program. More of Overtime is coming your way after this. Stick with us here on Fan Run Radio. back in the Truly Hard Seltzer Studios. Rolling along here on Overtime. Tap that nice little sign here. Give us some good luck for this segment as well. We had the officiating discussion out of the way. Again, I wish we had more time to... I wish we could dedicate like two segments to everything. But we got to keep rolling along here. So, let's talk some quarterbacks here. And not our side specifically. One of the reasons that you were able to make it such a game against Alabama and Tuscaloosa is, of course, Greg Amerson gets the hit on Tua. That went down as a sack, correct?
Yes.
I thought it was. I wanted to make sure I didn't misremember him throwing the ball away.
You're good.
So Greg Amerson, by the way, good little season he's been having.
He's done put together something. No.
Who would have thought Greg Amerson would be having the better season compared to Aubrey Salt?
Yeah.
I like Greg Amerson a whole lot.
I do too.
I like him a whole
nasty.
Lot.
Nasty.
Did he recover? Because I remember he was a little banged up near the end of the game.
Do you have
an injury report? I've seen
nothing about him. I don't think Pruitt mentioned anything about it. I think it was just something minor. But yeah, he gets a sack. And this is, of course, this is after Brian Maurer.
Mm-hmm.
Goes down. Let me see exactly. It was second quarter. How much time was left in the second quarter when it happened? I'm trying to think here. So Matt Jones was already in. Let's see here. It's one of these plays. Here it is. 7:20 left.
Okay.
It's about 7:20 left. My bad. That was the one sack there. Tua stayed in and went out. So, yeah, about 7:20 is when Greg Emerson recorded that sack. At that point, it's 21-10, Alabama. I'm trying to imagine what happens if just Tua doesn't go out. Because I don't think we play with any less intensity, but obviously, oh my God, the gap between Tua Tagovailoa and Mac Jones. Give me a nice little comparison here. I'm trying to think of one because that's
the Marianas Trench in the Pacific Ocean.
Ooh, that's
pretty
a good
large
one.
Gap.
That is a really good one. That's
a 2019 Maserati and a 2004 Chevy Impala.
No offense to any Impala owners out there.
No offense,
especially the 04 variety.
It's a 1904 Chevy Impala.
You're being mean.
Like a Model T.
Model T and a McLaren F1. That's what that comparison is.
Goodness gracious.
There can't be a bigger gap between starting quarterback talent, right? Starting to back up.
That's crazy.
He was bad. I know he made a couple of nice throws, but my God, you still have first round talent to throw to. Do you still have the stats up from receivers, by the way,
yeah,
here?
I do.
If you would have told me Friday that you don't give me away the final score, you don't even let me know that Tua went out in the first half. But you read me off their receivers' final stat lines. A first question is, how many rushing yards did Najee Harris finish with?
He finished with a total of 105 21 carries. Five a carry.
Not bad. Not bad. I would have thought, though, if you would read me off these stats from the receivers, that he would have finished with 250. Malcolm, tell the people the stats of these Alabama receivers.
So, Friday, we were talking about the four horsemen. Obviously, and I was just saying how they're going to, have 400 yards. Henry Ruggs led all receivers with 72 yards on 4 catches, 0 touchdowns. And Jerry Jeudy, to me, who is a top 3 pick, 3 receptions, 41 yards. Devontae Smith, who had 5 TDs against Ole Miss, had 1 catch in this game for 18 yards. And Jalen Waddle, who is unquestionably an All-American, had 1 catch for 13 yards. Pruitt did that, period. Done.
Even with Tua in the game still, I still felt like the defenses were being called okay.
Yeah.
I really did. I actually did. And another thing, too, you talk about some if and buts here. Malcolm?
Yeah.
Your boy, number 18.
Listen, man.
If he doesn't come up with that pick, well, first of all, what was Tua of all people doing throwing that pass?
I think Tua tried him up. Just like, I think my guy is better than your guy. I think you're not going to be able to make this play.
He telegraphed that to Nigel. And he started running down the sidelines. Was he just that slow, or was Ruggs just that fast?
All right, so I got a conspiracy theory. And Matt.
Oh, let's hear it.
Matt, let me know if I'm right or wrong on this one. So I think Nigel is about a 4'8", 4'9". But I also think, who was that, Ruggs?
That was Ruggs. Attractive.
I think he's about 4'2", 4'3", speed.
So I think is a combination of Ruggs being a not even human, outrunning him, and Nigel was running towards me. It looked like maybe he just got gassed. Because he kind of had to push through a pile out of the end zone to start in the first place, and that kind of stopped the cushion a little bit.
Yeah.
And he thought he had a blocker, too. I don't know if he slowed down on purpose, but it looked like he got gassed.
Y'all should have seen me at Elkmont when that pick happened, because I didn't really tell. I couldn't tell it was Nigel at first because of the camera angle, and it was so slow. He was so slow, I didn't think it was him. So I saw an 8, and for some reason I thought Jaquan Blakely? But I'm like, oh, that's a 1. I'm like, oh, Nigel, honey, what are you doing?
I saw somebody tweet, Dale Carter would have took that to the house. Y'all stop being mean, man.
Hey, we got to quit clowning him, seriously. This has been the best stretch of his career by far.
Of his career.
He's trying to get drafted.
He might, man.
I think he might. Might be third day.
He might.
But it might happen. So to wrap it up real quick, talking about Alabama quarterback situation. So Matt Jones finishes 6 of 11, 72 yards. Not terrible in relief, I guess. How many times were we able to sack him? So, because Tank McCullough, by the way, oh my goodness,
welcome
came through
to the show.
Like a bullet. I thought he could have forced a fumble. He hit him so hard.
Hit him, slap. I mean, just, ooh, it was nasty.
We were able to get him, you know, kind of rattled a little bit there. At least we were trying to. And you could tell, again, I was talking to y'all about this during the break. When Matt Jones comes in there, I felt by the first or second pass attempt, you can just tell he's booty. He's straight booty.
Mm-hmm.
And the defense smelt it. It's like smelling blood in the water.
Yep.
So they were able to play with a lot more confidence, wreak some havoc up there in the line. Not even just the passing game. Did you see the move Darrell Middleton made? To just completely knock the Alabama tight end almost back on his ass about 5 yards. Ryan DeNajee Harris, and he had nowhere to go.
When is the last time you've seen that versus an Alabama team? From a defensive lineman at the University of Tennessee.
Not in my adult lifetime. I guess Derek Barnett in 16, since he had a lot of good plays. Yeah. But that was just kind of his speed getting around the tackle.
But I'm saying straight up manhandle.
But manhandling someone backwards like that? I don't know. I don't know, Malcolm. But I do know this, though.
I'm sorry.
Matt Jones still sucks. If Tua goes out in a big game, they're screwed.
I mean, Tua went out, obviously, and they were showing, you know, the hallway. Did Brian Bauer even get hurt?
Watch his parents go down the hallway. Who gives a crap?
We also have Tua's kindergarten teacher in the hallway as well.
You thought the man died on the field. You thought you just saw Dale Earnhardt crash in the turn 4 again. And you were, like, following the ambulance. I thought we were going to have a chopper following the ambulance to a Tuscaloosa hospital. Give me a break.
I didn't hear Maui's name one time.
It's a soap opera.
I didn't hear it one time.
I get it's a name recognition thing, but who really cares that much? Did Alabama fans even really care about the hallway cam? I don't get it.
I don't
get a whole lot of things here. Hit another break here. I guess we'll talk about our quarterback coming up next year. We'll also get to the Next Door Home Group hotline, 865-546-8200, 546-8200. If you would like to hop on here, hit another break here. Overtime rolls along here on Fox Sports Knoxville. The segment of Overtime is brought to you by Eli Corum and the Next Door Home Group with Keller Williams Realty. They've been rated in the top 5% in the Knoxville market for the past 4 years because they are very straightforward. They will get the job done with money left in your pocket. They give you a fun, stress-free buying or selling experience. Eli Corum has a top-notch team with the most effective marketing programs in the real estate industry, and they have negotiation and customer service skills that are unmatched in the real estate market. To get them, call, it's 865-233-9461. To view their listings and find out more about the Next Door Home Group, just go to nextdoorhomes.com. NextDoor.com. No gimmicks, just results. They're the proud sponsors of the Nextdoor hotline here. So let's go over to the Nextdoor phone lines. Let's grab a call from T-Carp. T-Carp, happy Monday, man. What you got for us?
Happy Monday, guys. It's been said ad nauseum today, and I really agree, and I'm not trying to sheep it up, but Pruitt became, like, kind of one of us. Like, he bought, like, a lot, he got a lot of the fan base back on board, and I think rightfully so. Do you agree?
Yeah, I've been seeing that a whole lot there because, man, I have not seen so much collective love for Jeremy Pruitt on the timeline since, I guess, post-Kentucky, T-Cart, because obviously with the way you lose the first two games, just the vitriol towards him and the criticism, rightfully so, by the way, all-time high every time you open up the timeline. But now just, you know, going through the way that game went and the way you saw him just, I mean, rightfully so, lose his mind when it came to the calls and a whole lot of other things. At least right now, before we play some more games, he's won back a big portion of the fan base.
I think that was extremely necessary. I don't know of anything that could have come out better out of that game other than a win. Because you got your fan base back on board. You got your fan base kind of fired up and kind of having your back a little bit. You know what I mean? And does this game vindicate the anti-Garotinmos of last year? You know, I was really hard-pressed to find someone that agreed with me that Garantano shouldn't start. And then now this year, everybody's kind of jumping on the bandwagon. Does it vindicate us, or are we totally, you know, it just doesn't even matter?
I mean, it's, again, like it as hard as it is to find somebody right now who hasn't been won back at least bit in the Jeremy Pruitt camp, it's hard to find somebody who's in that JG camp in the slides, T-Carp.
Yeah, it's we all go with it. But on a serious note, defensive wise, Middleton, that kid's going to be a baller.
That's a beast.
Mm-hmm.
Phenomenal stats, by the way, when it comes to passing. And yeah, I know Tua was out, but if you've got you know all this in a bag of chips, wide receiving core. I mean, we shut them down, boys. That's great. The number one running back, though, can't think of his name. Kim Jordan.
Yeah, well,
is he your starter? Is he your number one from now on?
I don't think you can turn away from it at this point. To my surprise too, he's came out and had some heck of some ball games, and he, of course, we know that he's been the more physical of your little trio of backs that you had there, but. Man, he's been making good runs, and you know I'm here for it. Give me a bunch of viable options. Now I would like to see more out of Eric Gray, and
me too.
I don't know how much of that is his own fault, maybe in practice or this if it's a coaching thing. He's so talented. You need to get him the ball more. But I'm all for Tim Jordan and Ty Chandler maybe splitting the carries with Jordan, getting a little bit more of the share of that as long as they're both having productive games.
Yeah, I agree there. And, guys, last thing. I don't think you ever row Garantano out there again, obviously. But I go with Jennings and running the Wildcat. The guy can throw the football. I don't know how much of the quarterback, you know, reads and stuff he needs. But, you know, that's honestly what I would do. I just don't think Shrout's ready. I think Shrout's very... very, very much a turnover machine. Just throw Jennings in the Wildcat and roll with it, guys. Thank y'all so much. Y'all have a good one.
Appreciate the phone call, T-Carp. Yeah, okay. So that's a good little segue we can go right here.
Yeah.
So before we get to quarterback situation moving forward, because I agree with that T-Carp take a whole lot there, just from a principal standpoint. The sneak. The air quotes, sneak.
Sneak.
Sneak gate, rogue gate.
What a whole lot of sneaking going on right there. Dumbass gate, whatever you want to call it.
If you're going to sneak, your team needs to know you're sneaking. And from the O-linemen and from the whole offense. There were guys that talked after the game. Nobody knew what was going on.
Brandon Kennedy especially. I'll get the quotes here in a second, but let's go ahead. We haven't been mentioning it at all in the show here. Let's go ahead and talk about it. It's midway in the fourth quarter. There's still plenty of time in this game.
Yeah.
It's 28-13. You have the chance to really make Alabama sweat when they get back on offense. You have a chance if you can make that 28-20. If they get that ball back, they all of a sudden are, well, we obviously can't let Matt Jones try to throw us out of this. We're just going to get Najee Harris and hope he gets some first downs. You make Bama sweat for the first time all season.
Mm-hmm.
You make them sweat for the first – I'm not counting Clemson because they got blown out. You make them sweat for the first time since the SEC championship game, which is insane to talk about. Coming from this team, insanity that we were in this position. It's fourth and goal. You had already been stuffed your previous three tries. Obviously, you don't kick a field goal in that situation.
Yeah.
So you go for it. You do something. Why is it taking us – unless he's – has Crouch been in tailback – and goal line plays?
For goal line situations.
How often?
This is like the fourth or fifth time I've seen him back.
Okay,
there.
So it's happened more than I thought. Yeah.
It happened like twice, I think, at Mississippi State.
I guess just because he hasn't scored.
Yeah.
I haven't really noticed.
Yeah.
But anyway, so of course, we have the guy who played hybrid linebacker and running back in high school.
Mm-hmm.
Run in there as you should be. You get just, he's just a tank. We all know what happens. If you want another good breakdown, there's been a bunch of people in ball Twitter and just national media Twitter do some good breakdowns. I'm looking at Jordan Rogers' video.
Yeah.
I never thought I'd compliment something Jordan Rogers has done.
Excellent content, man.
He has the Skycam view of it, and within 2 minutes, he breaks down what has happened. That ain't no damn quarterback sneak, as everyone knows by now.
Mm-hmm.
That's the other thing with us being the evening show. If you're listening to this by now, you know what's been going on. If you watch the game, you know what was going on.
Yeah.
You set this up to have Trey Smith, your left guard, pull out to block the pass rusher coming from the edge right there. And you have your Austin Pope being a lead blocker for Aquarius Crouch. You have your tackles as well. Who was tackled? Is that Wanye? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Wanye and K'Ron Calvert. Try to go after tackles and linebackers who are going towards A gap. If that's a handoff, I'm not saying he walks in. That's probably a touchdown, though. Your odds of it being a touchdown are greater than your odds of that being stopped.
That's a house call, man.
Do we win the game? Do we put in overtime? I'd say I'm leaning maybe not, but my God, do you have a chance? You know what makes you not have a chance? When your quarterback calls his own shot, and no one else knows what's going on. He doesn't even. I don't even think JG's body gets past the 1 yard line when he tries to jump up. See, that's the thing too. He didn't even do like the good type of quarterback sneak, like the one Maurer scored on earlier in the game. He tries to do the Drew Brees jump up into the air, try to jump over the pile, and of course it is brought all the way back, 100 plus yards for a touchdown. That's game breaker right there, guys. That's abysmal.
Yeah,
I'm not going to give a hotter take than like what everyone else has been saying. It's one of the most abysmal and inexcusable things you can do in that situation. You yourself cost your team a chance, Jarrett Garantano. You cost them just a chance. It's awful. It's awful. It's one thing if it's a design called quarterback sneak and the whole team, the offensive line, is prepared for it and it doesn't work. Whatever. You get stopped at the goal line by Alabama. They're the number one team in the country. It obviously what happened is an entirely different ballgame.
Yeah. It was a 14-point swing pretty much because not only did he not run a quarterback sneak properly, he didn't have his line or anyone on the offense on the same page. And then when he did try to be the hero, he just jumped straight up in the air before. I mean, whoever hit him got to him quick because the blockers weren't lined up to protect him that way. And he just jumped straight up in the air, lost the ball. And instead of us scoring 7, Alabama takes it back and scores 7. It's a 14-point swing. And it was just a punch in the gut. And it wasn't designed to be that play. I mean, if we're relying on, you know, any of the, you know, resident lip readers we have in Vol Twitter, and I mean, almost anybody can figure out what Pruitt said, it was some variation of who the hell told you to run a sneak.
And also another variation of that was your last bleeping chance.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be happy either if I was him. I wouldn't be happy either. And I know none of us believe what Pruitt said post-game. I'll tell you one thing. They don't like – they're not going to throw one throwing players under the bus post-game. They will at least not do that. But you can get all you need to know by two quotes from offensive linemen that were there. Let's start with Brandon Kennedy. Brandon Kennedy, who is the center, who is, you know, the quarterback of the offensive line – just read this quote. He was asked about the fumble. He was asked about the play. Brandon Kennedy said, "I'm not sure. When we left the huddle, we had a play called, and then it changed at the line, and I'm not sure what happened." We had a play call, and then it changed. Wasn't changed by me. Wasn't changed by the coaches. He didn't say that, but that's pretty much what he means right there. Here's Trey Smith. "It was a miscommunication. I don't know what happened." Trey Smith trying to be very nice. A miscommunication. Malcolm, your thoughts?
I'm sorry, I've been kind of quiet.
You're like stewing over there.
I've been kind of quiet, like a crock pot, man. all right, so I never really just get on a player other than really Nigel, obviously, on this show.
It's worked.
Jared Guarantano, honestly, he has to go. He has to, and I hate to say it, man, because I searched his name on Twitter, Broadway J2, and I saw the things that were being said.
It's not pretty.
It is not pretty. Like it is honestly one of the most heartbreaking things I've ever seen, because this is a person, this is a human being. But when you play at a prestigious university like the University of Tennessee, and then you do something as selfish as what you just did, I'm not saying it's justified, but I understand. I'm not saying it's okay, but I understand.
We can't police the crazies. We just
no,
can't.
No, and I'm not going to at, you know, such and such and say the things that are being said.
No,
but
you should never at him.
No, absolutely not. But it's just, to me, it is incredible the amount. I mean, honestly, that was just flat out stupidity. So
pick it back up on the other side to end hour number one here. Again, a whole lot more to unpack that we don't have enough time to, but we'll try to wrap some of the game talk up when we come back here. 865-546-8200. 546-8200 is the number for the Nextdoor Home Group hotline. Be back to wrap up hour one of overtime on the other side. You know what's funny?
What's up,
and
Mike?
I knew it would last as long as it has. How many national media people are still up in arms, clutching their pearls over the face mask tug? I see nobody.
How many people are talking about Dabo making a player ride home with the equipment managers?
I've seen like one headline.
One headline
that was shared with.
How many people are talking about Jimbo Fisher ripping off somebody's face mask?
I forgot that happened. I completely forgot that happened. It's almost like people get it's almost like in 2019 people, when they get on the internet, they really like to pretend they're impassioned about something, and they really like to be part of the mob that's had the pitchforks and the torches.
Cancel
in hand,
culture, man.
And they forget about it in 36 hours. Not even 36 hours. I knew this would happen. I absolutely knew it would happen. You still see some takes out there, but come on.
Yeah, primetime game is just engagement central, you know?
Yeah.
If you would see Dan Wolk and Pat Forty, some other verified accounts tweets, they act like Jerry Pruitt just took the chopper to the bench. They act like he pulled an AK-47 out and just went crazy on the bench. They act like he committed serial mass murder. He barely tugged on a face mask. And it's not the Jimbo thing. It absolutely was not the Jimbo thing. Jimbo Fisher is grabbing that dude. I mean, he is
rocked
like,
it.
Malcolm, you played football.
I did.
I bet that was a rare occurrence, was it? The fan touching the face mask.
That was a daily occurrence from my coaches, man. My coaches used to pour out the water coolers if we didn't execute a drill correctly. Like, that's, I don't know. I was raised differently, though. It's a different time. I don't know, man.
I also understand you can't be doing all the things older football coaches did back in the day. You can't be like Bear Bryant and the Junction Boys and make them not drink water because you think it makes them tougher. You can't be doing things like that. What did Pruitt do?
He made sure that his quarterback looked him in the eye like a man and got the message.
JG has a history of like not looking Pruitt in the eye.
Like, it's literally like a scared little boy. No, he pulled his face mask so he knew that he understood the point.
You can't be abusing the kids like that. Jared Garantano is going to turn 22 in like a couple weeks. He's not a kid. He's not a kid.
So we're in the same era.
And do I believe college student athletes should be treated a little bit more fairly when it comes to compensation, things like that? Yes, but at the same time, you have to listen to someone you're a subordinate to. You just have to. And it's one of these things where, okay, I'd like to get the takes on people who have played in football, okay, who have played college football at this level. And they tell you that, yeah, it's just coaching. A whole lot worse things have happened. You even had Bryce Thompson yesterday said, man, it's just coaching. That's someone who's on the team now. Media, what a joke. It'd be such a joke sometimes.
But I also think, like what Justin was saying, primetime game. Guys, like we have to realize the amount of interactions that folks get from negatively talking about Tennessee. How much attention is brought to their mentions, to all the content that they're putting out.
It's easy to pile on, you know, the head coach of Tennessee when they're playing Alabama in primetime. He does, you know, pulls his player's face mask for half a second.
Yeah.
With like two, it was like two finger tug. Two fingers. Like, come on. It's not a story.
Yeah, they're not clutching pearls over that anymore. When they realized that people were responding the way like, dude, this is a non-story, stop it. They stopped it really quick. They stopped the whole outrage cycle really fast.
SportsCenter highlights even said that you can't do that. That's what he was saying when that play came on. I was like, man, I can tell who didn't play sports in high school, but go ahead.
Well, guess what? He can't do it, and he did.
So
you know what? Maybe JG should make an ass out of himself on the field. How about that?
I'd rather him throw a pick than do what he did.
You know what? That ball did go forward. Maybe he should have like said it was a forward pass. He should have been like that Arkansas punter. Worst fake punt I've ever seen. That was pretty bad.
Awful.
We'll get to other college football on the other side. Hour number one in the books. Hour two is coming up next. 865-546-8200 to hop on the Nextdoor Home Group hotline. We'll be back on the other side here. One more hour of overtime remaining.